chicken, credit cards, and China. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Sabri Benishour, in for David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross announced that the U.S. and China have reached a deal. It's a two-page deal to lower some of the barriers to trade between the two countries, make it easier to buy and sell certain goods and services to each other. Joining us now is Marketplace's Marielle Segarra. Marielle, what is in this deal?
So as is usually the case with a deal, both sides get something out of it. In the U.S. column, China is going to open itself up to some American firms and industries it had blocked. The ones that could now get more access to Chinese markets are natural gas companies, firms that do electronic payments like Visa and MasterCard, biotech companies like Monsanto, cattle farmers, U.S. credit rating agencies. And then in the China column, the U.S. is going to make it easier for Chinese entrepreneurs who want to invest here, and also for certain types of companies, like ones that sell cooked chicken.
So, you know, we're talking about chicken, gas, credit cards. It's awfully specific. I imagine there is a larger problem that this deal is trying to solve.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, China's our biggest trading partner. But over time, both of our countries have put up these barriers to trading with each other. This deal gets rid of some of those. Ishwar Prasad, who teaches trade policy at Cornell, told me this is a pathway forward for the U.S.-China relationship.
What this deal really is about is a de-escalation of tensions. The specific measures referred to in this deal really amount to small potatoes.
He says the deal won't get rid of the nearly $350 billion trade deficit with China, which President Trump has railed against.
All right. Marketplace's Marielle Segarra, thank you so much.
Thanks.
When the world economy broke back in 2008, policymakers had to figure things out fast, basically on the fly. So now, almost a decade worth of hindsight later, Yale University is creating a how-to guide for putting economies back together. It's sort of like a financial crisis response for dummies, except it's not for dummies at all. It's for very smart people, including central bankers. Marketplace's Ryan Kailoth reports.
Andrew Metrick worked on President Obama's team during the Great Recession. He says most studies about economic crisis are theoretical. But in 2009, he wanted a guidebook to say,
here are the best practices. Here are the things that work. Here are the things that make a crisis worse.
That didn't exist. Metrick now runs Yale's program on financial stability. And he's working with experts like former Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner to put together detailed case studies of past interventions. However, according to Liaquat Ahmed,
you don't actually know when you're entering a crisis how bad the crisis is.
Ahmed won a Pulitzer for his book about the causes of the Great Depression. He worries that having a playbook for a crisis can't really help if you don't even know to be using it yet. Metrick agrees, but he says Yale's new tool is solving a different problem.
When it's clear there's a fire and the fire department has showed up, which hose should you use?
Others can think about how to prevent the next crisis, Metrick says. He wants to make sure that when it does come, someone's equipped to manage it. In New York, I'm Ryan Kailoth for Marketplace.
The years since the Great Recession have been unkind to brick-and-mortar retail, with one exception: outlet malls. Those are the clusters of shops off the highway where you buy name-brand stuff for cheap. Well, outlet developers are making some changes to their business model to capitalize on their success, even doing some things a little more like normal malls. Marketplace's Aaron Schrank has more.
Carl Lee recently traveled 100 miles to buy a pair of shoes here at the Camarillo Premium Outlet Centers northwest of L.A.
Yeah, I got some Jordans. I saved $60. You can't beat that, right?
Lee says he comes to the outlets about once every 5 years or so. As for Adriana Cifuentes,
I would say twice a year. You don't really come that often.
That's how it goes. Outlet shopping has mostly meant taking a long drive out of your way and spending half a Saturday looking for bargains. That's changing with the latest wave of outlet mall development, says CoStar Research Director Suzanne Mulvey.
Developers are targeting locations closer to population centers and closer to higher income households.
Retailers used to have restrictions keeping outlets far away from their full-price stores, but they've relaxed them or removed them altogether in recent years. Mulvey says developers are also trying to give people more reasons to visit outlet malls.
As the environment that they're operating in has become more and more challenging, they're willing to experiment more. And so you're seeing a lot more food go into these centers. You're also seeing full-price retailers take space within outlet centers.
These moves come on the heels of unprecedented growth in outlet mall sales, says Lisa Wagner, a consultant with the Outlet Resource Group.
We always say that outlets are great in good times, and they're even better in bad times, and the recession of 2008 really bore that out.
Wagner says outlets are moving into the mainstream to reach more millennial shoppers who spend more on apparel than any other group.
And the millennials have grown up with outlets. This is part of their shopping behavior, and it's quite deep.
When it comes to buying certain brands, it's clear outlets will remain top of mind for shopper Adriana Cifuentes. Here's how she ended up at the mall in Camarillo.
We're looking for Nikes the other day, and then we're like, well, we should go to the Nike outlet, and this is our closest outlet.
That might not be true for long. Several developers are now planning outlets much closer to downtown L.A. In Los Angeles, I'm Aaron Schrank for Marketplace.
In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.